Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we've got Will Meadows, Sarah Meadows,
Katie Pills, Melissa Delp,
Kevin Delp,
Journeyman Dan, and Jonah Dew.
In the house.
Jonah's the worst intro ever.
He's coming.
They're on the way.
We couldn't pull them away from the board game.
They're having too much fun, so we decided to start without them, and we'll plug them in when they get here. We've been having all kinds of good times, as usual, playing lots of board games, and Sarah, Kevin, Jonah, and I had the opportunity to take a little road trip this past weekend, got to listen to some podcasts, and one of the podcasts, just to start off the episode, that we want to say congratulations, farewell, I don't know what the right term is, but to Josh Silva, Brandon Nall at the Brawling Brothers, their 150th podcast episode.
So long, farewell,
marks
I'll
the
be
end
just saying goodbye.
Of an era and a song. I like that, Kevin, that was good. Yep. Yeah, I think we should obviously give them a ding. Do we do that on our show? Any... A pew, pew, pew. We should give them a pew, pew, pew.
We just blow them up?
Oops, sorry, guys. Brawling Brothers, man, they were almost an inspiration for our podcast. One of the inspirations for our podcast. We had already done videos. They had started podcasting.
And we're doing it well. Inspired us, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. We've talked about the beginnings of our podcast in the past. It basically consisted of me saying, hey, you guys have a microphone plugged in. Do you want to do a podcast?
We had one mic, and we're all surrounding, and it sounded terrible.
It did. We've come a good way since then. I don't know that we've quite achieved Brawling Brother greatness, though. They do an excellent job on their editing quality, their content. It's all over the place. It was very entertaining. Yeah. Their post-production is great. So thank you. They gave us a little shout-out just as people that they've come in contact with and enjoyed in the industry. Hopefully, we'll see them at some time in the future because they are great guys, and we definitely enjoyed the opportunity to get to know them and to become friends. And yeah, congratulations. Farewell. It was good. Glad you guys have moved on to the greener pastures. I don't know what you move on to, but excited to hear what they've got in their futures. And one of the things that I think we're going to talk about on the podcast today as a result of that is...
Our topic
for the episode is kind of what got us into what we're doing. Why do we still do it? What do we enjoy about it? So this should be an interesting and open and fun conversation. But before we get into that, let's talk about some games that we've been playing recently. What kind of stuff have you guys gotten to the table this past week or two?
I recently started getting into Lost Ruins of Arnak.
Okay.
And definitely a big fan of that one. That's quickly rising to my list of like games that I actually want to get. So I still have yet to play the actual physical version. I've only played it on Board Game Arena. It's one that I need to get physically on the table. But very cool game. I've enjoyed that one.
It has nice components with the little arrowheads and crystals. So Kevin and I have a prototype pre-production copy, so it's not the actual published version, but it's very similar. You can just tell that some of the components aren't quite to the standard as the published version, but we've really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play it. Now, obviously, it was nominated for the Spiel, and the Spiel news came out.
Oh, nice segue.
Yeah, I didn't mean to segue it, but good job on the Arnak game. It didn't win, but what won that category? Paleo
won that category.
Yeah. So that was like a little bit of a surprise to us, I think, right? Weren't we like not assuming that Paleo had it in the bag?
I was really wanting Lost Ruins to win, but I said that Fantasy Realms would win.
Oh.
And this is for the Kenner Spiel.
Right, Kenner Spiel.
Yes.
But we were correct on the Spiel.
Yes, Spiel des Jahres being Micro Macro. Congratulations. Really interesting and fun game. We've talked about it a couple times on the channel. I think, here we go, another segue. I think we're going to be playing that during our... what are we calling it? A 12-hour game-a-thon?
Sure.
We haven't fully announced our Kickstarter date yet, but it will coincide. Did we?
I think we've sort of announced it.
Oh, okay, good. What day is it? Because I don't remember.
August 17th is our Kickstarter launch date with lots of cool promos.
That's right. And to help launch it, kick it off, celebrate it, we are going to be doing an all-day gameplay live on our YouTube channel. So you should definitely tune in for that. That'll be the 18th. Did I already mess up the dates?
Nope, yep, the next day.
So it'll be a Wednesday afternoon, but we'll be playing all night long. So tune in at some point, say hi. We'll be doing giveaways and having all kinds of fun, playing lots of games like Micro Macro.
We can give one little sneak peek of one promo that's going to be exclusive to Tantrum House.
Do it.
We've had in the past some Chronicles of Crime promos. Well, there's going to be three new Chronicles of Crime promo cards, Sarah, Katie, and Chantel.
Sweet!
Three different ones.
Get your hands on them. You can do that during our Kickstarter.
We don't even know what faces I stole to.
I know. There have been a good one.
Risky.
I know.
I asked for
Kevin
them. No one replied.
For a photo.
I did. I asked a few weeks ago.
Okay. I didn't
like
read your emails.
While I was on vacation. Totally.
No excuses.
Didn't have a camera. Wait. You did.
I took a... Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. I can't wait. So we'll have three new promos from them. We were talking about playing... What game were we talking about playing during the day of playing? Something from Lucky
Duck.
We're
still working on the schedule. Yeah.
Got some cool ones, though.
You can get to the event.
There might be a few new things coming out that'll be hotness for Gen Con that we might get in time for the...
That's very true.
...the 12-hour.
Trying to hold out.
Yeah.
Yep, should be great. We'll have a schedule for it. We do have the event already created on our YouTube channel, so you can like it, subscribe, hit the bell, whatever you're supposed to do, so that you can be notified when we do go live. All kinds of fun stuff. All right, back to games that we've been playing recently.
Melissa and I played, and Dan, we played recently In the Mist.
Oh, that's right.
In the Mist.
Islands in the Mist.
No, it's just M-I-S-T.
No D in there.
But you want to say In the Mist. But anyway, In the Mist. This is a tile laying... hot air balloon ride, where you're trying to connect terrain on your own player board, moving your hot air balloon around your player board. The interesting thing about this tile laying game, as you're connecting these terrain tiles on your board, are as the hot air balloon moves around your board, you may only place the tiles on the six spaces surrounding your hot air balloon. So if you really want to place a terrain tile in a specific area, you got to get your hot air balloon...
Close enough
to get to that spot.
Right, because a player is going to be rolling two dice, and the one die is going to tell you a direction, like southwest or northeast. And then the other die might let you go more than that, just one direction, or
it's
might give you energy.
Yeah.
But when you're already in the northwest corner of the board and people keep rolling northwest... You have to spend a bunch of energy to try to go against the flow of the wind.
The number of spaces you move is determined. Is what you're going to say, Dan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go for it. No, you go.
Well, the number of spaces you move is determined by what space you're on. So if the space you're on says four, then you have to move four in the direction you're going.
Must.
Yes, you must. So if you want to stop at two, you have to spend a couple of energy just to stop, and then two more energy for every space in a different direction you want to go. So... You're really trying to save up that
you
energy.
You actually have to, and if you want to go a different direction, you actually have to go all the way down to zero.
Yep. You have to slow all the way down.
Yep.
What? Yep. So real.
It's very,
I've never been in a hot air balloon.
But it's very interesting because your hot air balloon is flying all over the board, and you're like, I really want to put tiles. Oh, no. Not going to happen. Huh. But you can save tiles. There's a little spyglass section at the top of your board. You can save tiles for later and stuff. So.
Yeah, there's also a draft for the tiles.
I find it very intriguing.
Who's that one from?
This is from Stronghold. Brought it over. I don't know. They brought it over from Europe. I don't know where they have it, but they're basically localized it here in the U.S.
Cool. So. One of the games that I got to the table this past week was Torpedo Dice. It's a roll and write game where you are playing kind of competitively against each other. You have a board in front of you that you are marking stuff on, and you have kind of like this control panel where you have opportunities to manipulate the die that you've chosen. And then you have your opponent's submarine, which is the person to your right or left. I don't remember, person to your left, that you're looking at through your like viewport. And you're trying to X off all the necessary spots on their submarine in order to take them out. Whoever's the first player to take out another player wins the game. So in the game, you roll a die, you select one in turn order, and then you mark off. It's kind of interesting. I haven't seen this in a roll and write. You mark off on your board the grid of pips that a nine slice. How do I describe this?
Help me, you're getting Melissa. Lost. We're, yeah. We're losing you. So you're going to consider your die as a 3x3 grid.
That's a good way to describe
it. Okay. So if you chose a six, you would have three on the top, none in the middle, and then three on the bottom, basically, of this grid. And you would have to mark the sections of the submarine in that pattern.
Yes. And so if you, the pattern, the submarine only has specific targets that you can hit. And so if your pips make you hit spaces that aren't on the grid, then you take like misfires. And if you hit so many misfires in the game, you sink your own ship. And then you also have to like power up your dice manipulation tool. So maybe you get stuck with a four die, which doesn't fit on your board anywhere and you don't want to use it. But as long as you have certain abilities on your board, you might be able to add one or subtract one, or you might be able to flip the die over, or you might be able to ignore one of the pips that you should fill in. But as your ship gets more destroyed by your opponent, you lose some of those abilities. So, I don't know. It was a pretty solid. It's fun looking. It feels a little bit battleship-ish, even though you're not like randomly guessing stuff. And I had a good time playing it.
Well, Ryan and I have tried out Birdwatcher.
Okay.
And that's a set collection game where you're taking photos of birds in the jungle. I guess where birds of paradise are.
Is that paradise.
Papua New Guinea, I believe.
Paradise.
But it's a different style set collection. It's moving them around, and are you
jumping ahead to our Kickstarter segment?
Maybe.
Segway. Oh no, coming back to it. Is it coming out soon?
It's coming out on Kickstarter.
It is coming out soon. But that's a game that we've been playing and enjoying. Cool. So yeah.
Cool. Give us more rundown. Sarah and Jonah had the opportunity to play Unmatched Deadpool Edition with their Deadpool characters this past week. What do you think of that one?
Well, I played one of the characters from Jurassic Park. I played as the Raptors, and it comes as I get three Raptors on the board, and Jonah played Deadpool.
It's probably pretty powerful.
Deadpool?
Yeah.
Well, he can kind of regenerate a little bit, so every time he attacks, he gains health. So what lost it for me was right out of the gate, he got one of the most powerful cards in his deck right at the beginning, and it killed a raptor immediately.
Is it the Chris Pratt card where you get to like hold off dinosaurs? Is that, I don't remember what that is.
No. No, he was Deadpool. Oh, I had the Raptors. No, I didn't get a Chris Pratt card.
You should have.
Would have been cool, but it was pretty devastating because the way the Raptors work is a lot of their bonuses are based off of trying to surround the other characters, so it's harder to surround when you have just two. So it made it tricky to I played a valiant fight till the death, and then Deadpool pulled it out at the end.
My money would be on Deadpool versus a bunch of dinosaurs any day. He's got in the bag.
We're talking Raptors, so
still. If Chris Pratt can take them out, Deadpool can definitely take them out.
Chris Pratt didn't take them out. He
was their father.
Oh, he was their friend.
Yeah. These are right. Hungry Raptors.
They did. They saved him. I forgot. It was the opposite. They would definitely try to kill Deadpool.
Another game that Melissa and I have been playing is a game from Indie Boards and Cards called Crack the Code. This is a Hanabi style.
Oh, is this the marble one?
This is.
Yeah. Hanabi. How was it? I want to know. Tell me more.
The game is amazing. In the rules and what the gameplay, the components are a little chintzy, though.
They're not cool marbles. They're like
actually like bouncy balls.
Oh, really?
So they're kind of rubbery, but when you can't like Hanabi, basically people are going to have several of these differently colored balls in front of them
in a little tray, so they're not rolling around
a tray. But then you have a card between you and the ball, so you can't see the ones in your tray.
Not supposed to see the ones in your tray.
But the rubbery material means that they don't
slide well.
They kind of get stuck, and you're throughout the game going to be picking them up out of your tray
putting
and putting them
in other
people's trays, and they just kind of
sticky.
Stick.
And the tray themselves are like, think of the most flimsy plastic that you can think of. Like, you know, the hard plastic, but the ones that are like, what do you, like, I'm trying to think of.
Flimsy.
Saran wrap? No.
Yeah, no, like, you know, like, in like,
thinnest plastic.
Like the cookie tray, like in a cookie, like
packaging for
like cookies? Cookie. Yeah, that's what that feels like. It's like super chintzy plastic.
So like vacuum form, but a very thin.
Yeah.
You mean like the actual Chips Ahoy?
Yes.
yeah.
Throwaway plastic.
Throwaway plastic. Anyway.
Tray that they're in.
That's the bad thing. The good thing is the game is really cool. It's got this crew mechanic where they give you these missions and you're trying to complete the missions. And you're just like, I need to get a blue ball, a red ball, and a yellow ball in my tray in a specific order. And that's what the card says. So you are basically revealing cards in the middle of the table. And they can be like send, receive,
yeah, so route. Basically action cards. Yeah.
And you are using those actions to move those balls all around the table. And you have to get everyone's cards, co-op. Everyone's got to get the balls, the code in front of them correct before the deck runs out.
Cool. I like it. Hanabi, obviously one of my top 10 games. What? How does it compare? Which one's better?
Well, I don't really like Hanabi, but I like this one.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, Hanabi and Crew, I still take Crew over this, but I would say this is a good second best.
Okay, cool. So we just need a deluxe edition, huh?
Oh, yeah. If it had better marbles and a better tray, I mean, the game would be, like, amazing.
Yeah, and it walks you through the mission, so it starts out very simple.
Very simple.
Like, oh, you need three of the same color in your thing, and then there's little boxes and envelopes as you progress, you're opening new things and finding new components, and the objectives are getting more difficult.
Highly recommend the game.
Is it like replayable at the end, though? Do you go back through?
And... Oh, you can play the same mission, like the harder ones over and over again, especially if you're failing them, and you're getting different cards and stuff. So it's just like Crew. You can play the same mission over again.
Okay.
So
cool.
And you can. It's always four players, but if you don't have four players, you're just...
So always four trays of marbles.
Oh.
So sometimes you're moving
trays in front of nobody.
Correct.
But you're all
dummy players.
Interesting. Yep. All right, so before we get too far into the show, we do need to take a moment to talk about the contest that we were running. We just put this out in our last e-blast, and we talked about it on our podcast last week, and that is that we are giving away a free badge, a free ticket, a free pass, I don't know what they call it, to the Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
Very cool. I'm super excited about this because Will and I and Kevin and Melissa will be there as well as our kids, so we would love to play games with you.
Yeah, it'll be super fun. So we are going to go ahead and draw a name from the lineup of people that entered. I'll let Sarah read the name off. Go ahead.
And the winner is Zachary Gritz. Congratulations!
That's right. It's actual grits, which is excellent. I just had some super fantastic grits the other day at Maverick Biscuit in Greenville.
Brand new restaurant.
Commercial sponsor there. But what we're actually talking about is, well, I guess it kind of goes with Southern Fried Gaming, actually.
It does.
Super fun convention happening in August this summer. We are going to be hanging out there. Video games, pinball games, board games, and hopefully, Zachary, you can join us. Be looking for an email from us with some details, and we'll get you hooked up so that you can join us at the event, hopefully.
Very cool. Hope to see you there.
All right, well, let's jump from here into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode will be talking about five games coming to Kickstarter the weeks of the 26th of July through August 2nd. Katie, start us off.
Okay, so Bird Watcher has been pushed off until September.
We're not going to hear about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Katie.
So,
it's my fault.
Yeah, so I will revisit that one.
The anticipation.
In September.
But it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've enjoyed it.
Okay, over to Melissa.
All right, sometime either in the last week of July, beginning of August, we're looking for Thunder Rolls to come to Kickstarter from Mr. B Games and Zeroic Games, and it's actually designed by Richard Lanius, who is a friend of ours. Kevin and I go over there and play games at his house often. We've actually played this prototype
multiple times.
Yes, in many iterations as he's been working on it through the last year or so.
I'm not jealous.
And this is a stock car
play with us?
Racing okay, game, which I believe we're going to be playing live at some point on the channel.
August.
So,
ooh, do I get a flight?
Yes, August 5th.
Will, you can play with
no,
us.
No, he's got a Switch.
Yeah, figures.
I've also done a how to play video, which will be on our channel, that goes through a lot of the rules for the game. But basically, it's a dice rolling placement game. Think Las Vegas, where you're basically bidding on the tiles to have the most dice there, but more advanced than that. Each action, each tile is an action. So when you place your dice there, you're going to be able to do something special, like move your car, side draft somebody and make them go backward, crossover, which is basically swapping spots with someone who's in front of you. So each of those tiles is related to a specific die value. So the twos are the rubbin' is racin', and that lets you affect the other cars. So you're going to be placing all your dice, and then at the end of that phase, this rolling phase, whoever has the most dice on a tile is going to be able to draft cards from that area. So the first, second, and third place on that action actually get cards. And you're going to use the cards in the second phase of the game, which is programming four of these cards. And they're going to have like move five, draft. So they're going to have movement and actions on them. So you're going to want to get the best cards to then program, and then you're going to race with those four cards that you've already programmed. So once they're down, you can't change them. But lots of things can happen with other players and your cars. And basically, you're trying to get the farthest.
One thing Melissa did mention in that is that at the beginning of the game, you're choosing your race. So there are a few to choose from, and they could be one stage where you're doing, like Melissa said, rolling the dice, placing them, and then drafting and placing the cards. But some of them have two stage races, so you are doing that two times, which is very interesting. There's different rules for like a super speedway, and
Even dual-sided boards, so you have your ovals, or you have road courses, so there's going to be more turns, the track's going to be more windy, and each race has some specific rules for that type of racetrack.
Now, is this based on like Daytona 500, or is this, what's the race?
It's those types. It's NASCAR.
Okay. So basically, NASCAR has a bunch of different road course or different tracks, and the game simulates those different tracks.
Okay.
So
when I heard the name at first, I was expecting like Thor to be racing. I don't know why.
Lightning. And one other cool thing.
Glad you mentioned.
The cars are going to come with sticker sheets, basically, so you can decide what sponsors go onto your cars. And I believe one of the sticker sheets that's going to be included is a Tantrum
House.
Yep.
Pew, pew, pew. Give me some sound effects.
Yep.
Love it. Awesome. Good job. Way to put the work in on that.
So, yes, that's Thunder Rolls from designer Richard Lanius, coming sometime soon to Kickstarter. Kevin.
So we have a game coming the first week of August from Colossal Games called Almanac the Crystal Peaks. This is a second entry into the Almanac series. The first one you may have heard of is called Almanac the Dragon Road, and a few of us here around the mics have played that one. It is a twist on worker placement, and the game comes with a map book, and throughout the games you are opening up the book, and you're basically playing the worker placement game on that map, and then you are making decisions that could move you to, or will move you to, a different page of the map for another game.
They're all in the same game.
Sorry, all in the same game.
Different rounds.
Different rounds. And you are, thank you, Melissa, different rounds. And then you are moving to that other map, which is a totally different take on a worker placement game. And Crystal Peaks is bringing all of that plus more different things to it. And it can, we were doing some research, it can be integrated with Dragon Road, and the specific things that can be integrated are the encounter cards, wagon cards, and contract cards. They all are cross-compatible between those two. So check out Almanac of the Crystal Peaks from Colossal, the first week of August on Kickstarter. Dan.
All right. Also coming the first week of August is Dino Dodge from Blue Gear Games. It is a push your luck game where you are dinosaurs and you're trying to basically eliminate your other friends. It's very much a take that type of game.
So are they really your friends?
No, no, definitely not. Each round a meteor comes out and there's a countdown for when that's going to strike the ground. And if you're under it or if your opponents are under it, when that meteor hits, then you die. So your goal is to push your opponents under a meteor or somehow get out.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
Definite friends. We've definitely qualified.
Yes. And then, you know, it starts out as land, but if a meteor hits it, it turns to lava. So now the space that you can land on becomes smaller and smaller. Because if you can't get off it by the end of your turn, you also die. The game is coming not just with the base game, but they're including another pledge level that includes four different expansions, kind of mini expansions in the way they do it, that bring little elements to the game and kind of change things up. You can play them just one at a time, or you can throw all of them together. And they just bring in some different ways that it manipulates the game. Some of them are a little more helpful, so you can control some more of it. Some of them just add more chaos, so it's just shenanigans as you run around trying to drop meteors on each other. It's about a 15, 30-minute game. It's community-designed, which is kind of cool. So they had different people contribute to the design of this game, and it kind of grew and built upon itself as they pitched it around to different people. But that is Dino Dodge. It's coming August 3rd, I believe. And Will, what cool. do you have?
I am checking out the game Divinus. That's how we're pronouncing it these days.
That's how the publisher pronounces it.
Even better. The publisher is Lucky Duck Games, and the designer is Philip Mielnitsky. He's got that awesome last name. This is a 2-to-4-player tile placement game, but it's a legacy game. And it's also got...
a replayable legacy game.
Yes.
With app integration.
With app integration and dice. So in the game, you will be, you'll set up your board where you'll be drafting, I think it's 12 different tiles.
Yes.
And on your turn, you'll roll all your dice and you will then place them in whatever combination you need to in order to create the math necessary to be able to claim the tile. So if I've got a 5 and a 4 and a 1, I've got all kinds of different options. I can take the 4 one, the 5 one, or the 1, or the 9, or the 10, or the...
The eight,
lots of different options. Anything that I can create the math for, I can. Dan looked like he was doing the
no,
math.
No, yeah, I was doing the math. No, you got it. You got it.
Then you claim that tile and you add it to your tableau, and it's basically Carcassonne rules where you're trying to match land types to each other. But throughout the course of the game, you also have some specific goals that you're trying to achieve based on the icons that are on the tiles. And if you can collect enough icons, you'll get a bonus. And then as you get those bonuses, you'll actually be adding stickers and different things to the game, unlocking new rules, adding stickers to your die to give you more options, like a 3-6 option on one side of your die, or adding icons to your tiles, which will make them worth more points. We played through the first scenario tonight, and I thought it was pretty great, actually. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Dan taught us, and we jumped right into it. It was quick to pick up, which was great. There was tons of strategy in, man, how do I... The two cards that we had for this first round of the game were the most like land masses, most water, most... each of the different types of terrain type, or the largest, which I struggled to differentiate in my mind early.
Yeah, because an area, so the most areas is like two tiles that make up, you know, they each have grass, water, whatever. So that's one area. But then if you have one massive section, well, that's just one big area as opposed to maybe four or five little ones.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting trying to figure out where to put those tiles. What can I buy from the pool with what I have?
It's amazing.
Kevin won.
Well, that's the interesting thing, that Kevin is technically like he's in the lead, but you're playing
it's
through
not
12
over yet.
Yeah, you'd play through 12 scenarios, and you're getting these points appeasing one side or the other. We're basically all demigods, and the Norse gods are coming to invade the Greek gods, and we're kind of there in the middle, and they're trying to kind of recruit us. So your actions in the game give you points towards one side or the other. And we don't know yet, but eventually I I'm assuming, you know, if you're heavy on the Norse side, then you're going to get benefits from the Norse gods. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, so you walk away from the end of the game and you mark your player box with the number of basically red or blue icons that you were able to pick up, which will assumedly give us additional powers, benefits, bonuses in future games. I'm already ready to play round two. What are we doing? Let's see.
The app is pretty cool, too, because it gives you that integration where it's tracking how many points you're getting for each side. When you do a quest, you push a button and it reads through and it gives you options like, do you want to chop down the forest and build a citadel, or do you want to preserve it and gain benefits from Gaia or whoever it might be?
Oh, I was going to say that we did add some stickers to some tiles, and I think they are removable.
The ones on the tiles, they say, are not.
Okay.
But the ones on the dice are on that micro dice. Suction cup.
And the one that I stuck on my box in the wrong spot was definitely removable.
Well, that's good.
As I gently field it back off.
I wouldn't bank on that, though.
But we haven't actually seen what those extra stickers do in future games. When people choose those tiles, they'll probably trigger events or something based on that sticker on the tile.
Yeah, that go ahead, Will.
I was just going to say the artwork for the game looked great. I actually didn't mind at all the stickers being stuck on. They were like still crisp and sharp and looked good. I just overall enjoyed the visual for it a lot. It was a lot of fun.
And this is coming to GameFound, not Kickstarter.
That is correct.
Coming July 26th is Lots Filled In. I talked a little bit about this on a previous episode, but their campaign got moved a couple of weeks. This is a 2-4 player roll and write version of the game Lots from Zach Connolly and Rose Connolly from Royal N Games. And in this one, you are going to be snake drafting, or like how you might do in Sagrada, where everyone chooses one and then in reverse turn order chooses a second die. And the way that you are going to fill in spaces on your construction is based on the two dice that you selected. So one die is going to stand for the color, and then the other die will be the shape. So you have a little bit of choice there on what you're going to fill in for that turn. And then it is the you're going to be gaining points based on how you fill in that construction. So each row, the more different colors of blocks that you use, the more points you'll gain. And then the first one person to fill in each row Tetris style will also gain a bonus for that. And so you keep playing around the table, taking turns who's the first player to select first, and as soon as somebody has completely cannot fill in one of their blocks and the game's over and you score, and there are end game bonuses and there are worker cards that give you some extra abilities throughout the game. So a good re-implementation of the original game into a roll and write game. We got to play this at Spielbound with a few people, got to try it out. And the family that we played with, parents weren't like heavy gamers, weren't into a lot of the heavier games. They were very casual and they had a great time with it. And those of us who enjoy roll and writes and are used to a little bit heavier strategic game, we also enjoyed it just because there's enough thinking involved in some of those bonus points to make it enjoyable for different levels of gamers.
Yeah, I'm going to use that as a segue into our next segment because I enjoyed playing the game with the people that were with us. It was obvious that I think it was a family, son, mother, father. I think the son had drugged them into Spielbound, and he was like, no, it's great, you're going to love it. And the dad was like, I'm just going to look at my phone for a while. And the mom, if you guys are listening, we had a great time with you, by the way. The mom was all into it. She was like, yeah, let's play it. This sounds fun. I know how to play Tetris. I'm in. And we taught them how to play the game and had a great time with them, got to know them a little bit, figure out where they're from, you know, what kind of stuff they were up to. And as I was sitting there thinking about it, you know, we're in a state far, far away from our normal place in a board game shop full of strangers. And yet we were able to sit down and make some connections with people, build, you know, start what could potentially be a friendship over some like two dice or six dice and a couple pieces of paper and a pencil. And that's why I enjoy this hobby so much. So there's the segue. Why is it that we do what we do? The time is crazy. The amount of time it takes to receive a game, learn it, play it with more players, determine that it was broken, that we didn't enjoy it, that we probably don't want to waste the time to put it on the channel, to then move on to the next game, to learn it, to play it, to have a good time, to determine that it's great, to shoot it, to edit it, to upload it, to post it. Whew, it is a lot of work. But those opportunities to hang out with total strangers and have a great time for an hour balance it out. Like, it really is a lot of fun. So, question for you guys at the table. I will act as the MC as I drill you all. This is my chance as the technical president of Tantrum House. Why are you guys here? What's the story, Dan? Not an official partner of Tantrum House. We have an LLC so that if we ever like teach someone the game wrong and they sue us $1 million, we don't go to jail. Dan is journeyman. Been here
so
for a long
that mean
time.
I go to jail since I'm not part of the LLC.
You're on your own, Dan.
You're off the hook entirely. Why do you hang out with us, Dan? What's the story?
Because you guys are the best.
Aww. That's not what I wanted. Sound like I was setting you up for that. You bring your family. We hang out on Monday nights. Tell us your involvement. Like, what are you doing behind the scenes that nobody knows? And then, share a little bit of why maybe you enjoy it or what's in it.
I think I pick up a lot of the heavier games that you guys don't want to do necessarily.
That's correct.
Yeah. So
not that we don't want to do, but that we need somebody to learn the rules for. There's so many coming in.
So I do enjoy doing that.
Like Dino Dodge and Defense.
Okay. I have to get a light one now.
just helping you out.
Yeah, thanks. I do get involved with the newsletter. A lot of times I'm writing some of the stuff with that. So that's been a lot of fun to get in on that side and kind of explore a little bit more of my creativity.
Yeah, wide open up.
Yeah, whatever's there, I can tap into that. But really, it is just the friendships that are made, those random connections, meeting people through, I met a guy at Tantrum Con 2-3 years ago, and he's now in the area, and we got together and we played a game. And that's just, it's cool that a game can bring people together from all over the place and have those connections. Why I do it with you guys, it's just, it's fun. You
There's
guys,
no one else.
it's a fun...
I'll be here all night.
Fun group of people, very different personalities, but yet we can all connect and just have fun times together and rub off on one another. That's really it for me. I do enjoy checking out these heavier games, and then I pull out this 40-page rule book, and my wife rolls her eyes. And I was like, how can you do this? But now I'm seeing the shift in my oldest kid. She loves it. Yeah. And she's playing games like Divinus and doing well. And that's just really cool to see. Every time a new game comes in the house, she's like, Dad, can I play this one? And so when she gets that time to really connect with me, it's a huge blessing, and it's a lot of fun to have that. So that's something I was hoping would happen, but I didn't want to force it on her.
Right.
So I'm really glad that she's jumping all over it.
And she'll remember these times,
Oh, absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we first started this whole Tantrum House thing and we started, opening it up so that people could send us their games if they wanted to, that first year, I'll admit, was like Christmas every day. I mean, it was magical. A new game comes in the mail. What is this thing? This looks so cool. It was super great, until there were like 3 games coming in the mail every day. And it was like, I don't even have time to look at these things. So one of the things that I enjoy about having, interns and sidekicks and everybody else that comes in is being able to like spread that a little bit further, because it is fun to get a game in the mail that you can enjoy
for sure,
and play
yeah.
and have fun with. And so, we enjoy it. Our kids enjoy it. I love being able to pass games on to other people that they can go and do the exact same thing with. That has been one of the super fun parts of it that I hadn't guessed would be a thing at the very beginning at all.
So one last thing came to mind. A friend of mine reached out to us and she was like, hey, I tried to teach this game Space Alert to a bunch of people who aren't gamers, and I found that I am terrible at explaining games.
Not a gateway game.
Not a gateway game. So she was like, can I come over and have Dan teach me how to play so that you know, I can then teach it to other people. And that it was just, you know, she's sitting there grilling me like, how do you do this? How do you just sit down and read a rule book and like know how to play? But again, spreading that joy and that knowledge to other people. And it was kind of cool to have this random person just be like, hey, you know how to teach board games. So that was fun.
It is fun. It's a lot of fun. I've seen Melissa leading in too. I'm assuming Melissa is a teacher at heart. Like, she's not a teacher professionally, although she is kind of a, she can get into that. But yeah, when you have that little bit of a teacher bug in you, there's like nothing better than teaching stuff that's super fun. Teaching school, great. You should be called to it. It's wonderful. Teaching games, oh, best thing ever.
For sure.
Yeah, I was going to say the teaching games to people and watching their eyes light up as they start to put everything together is one of my favorite things. I go to a convention and end up finding people just to teach games to. Now does. I go to conventions and
you.
I...
If you look confused, don't worry. Melissa's there. She's coming.
Yeah, at Tantrum Con, I'm like... board game teacher kind of running that aspect of it. But yeah, I go to other conventions and sign up to with other companies to teach games because I really do enjoy that aspect of what we do here.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I do some of the how to play videos.
Right. Yeah. There's something fun about watching people get it. Like that moment that the lights turned on, they figured out the strategy. We're in round three. They were totally lost the last two rounds. Now they get it. Like there's a success feel in that. That's really cool. Katie, tell us your tale. What's the motivating factor for being a part of Tantrum House?
Oh man, mine is not teaching games. I'm not good at teaching games. I keep trying to work on that. And I'll be honest, I don't know if it's making connections through board games either, but I'm competitive. Oh my goodness.
She likes to beat people. Hey, that's good. That's part of the diversity.
I do.
She likes to beat people up.
But you play a lot of co-op games.
I do also really enjoy, I do play a lot of co-op games, but that's us beating the game together. So... there's a competitiveness in that as well. But so I'm really competitive and I like playing games and I like just striving to make new strategies, figure out new strategies and how they're going to work in the game. So more, maybe that's more of a personal push. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like doing that. But one of the things I do like doing is playing games with people and absolutely just rolling, laughing over things that happen in the game. Like, I do enjoy some good party games. And just, I mean, I like the memories that I get from playing a game. And everybody has a great time. And everybody is just laughing and enjoying themselves. And I guess I like the atmosphere of being around people who are really enjoying something. So I, like I said, I don't know if I'm good at teaching the games at all, but I really enjoy watching other people enjoying the games. I go to a convention, this is going back to the convention part of this, I go back to conventions and I help teach games. And although I'm not a great teacher, I really enjoy, helping people find a game they really like.
You're a board game DJ.
Oh, maybe that's it. So I just like, I mean, sometimes I'm teaching a game. I can tell they're not super interested. And I'm like, hey, I realize maybe you didn't enjoy this game, but maybe your style is more of this other game over here. I really like when people ask me, the lady that cuts my hair emailed or texted me like at 11 o'clock last night, was like, my son's thinking about buying a game. Do you think he should buy this game or this game? You know? And I was like, oh, I don't know her son at all. But I tried to tell her what I knew about the games so to help him figure out what game he would like better.
Monopoly or Scrabble?
No. He was actually looking at Scythe and I can't even remember what the other game was.
Okay.
And so I was telling her what I knew about the games.
Good job.
So maybe they could help. But I do enjoy helping people figure out games that they will also enjoy and have those great memories. So, yeah.
I think the convention thing is one of those things that I didn't have any grasp of when we first started. Like, I had never been to a board game convention. We just kind of played games together and it was fun. The the multiplication of that excitement level that goes from like we're just a bunch of good friends hanging out in the living room playing to like these are total strangers. It's 2 a.m. We've been playing for 4 hours. Like, I finally won.
Is Jonas still around playing games? Is that where he's...
I don't know what he's doing. Better get in here. I need his story. That part of the hobby is something that I don't, you know, not everybody gets to experience that part of going to conventions and stuff.
They should.
They should.
Everybody should strive for that, though.
Yeah.
At least once. You should go at least once.
Absolutely. I think if you
and
do go once.
TantraCon is a great one to try out first.
You should. Badges will go on sale soon. that part of it was something I never anticipated. And yeah, absolutely. Some of the best memories I have playing board games are at events with people that I only see, you know, twice a year. At these events for, and I've seen them now, and now we've become friends because I've seen them at the last 5 years worth of conventions, and that like the level of intensity and competition there is so much higher, and I think just the level of appreciation, and so those times are some of the most magical board gaming experiences.
If you did not get a chance to see James Hudson's episode of Starting Roll from last year that he covered Essen footage, I was privileged to be a part of that and had a little bit to do in that episode, but I got to talk about that the board games just level the playing field for everybody at the table. It doesn't matter your age. Most of the time you can modify games for younger kids or somebody who's older, and
or they can be young and beat you anyway.
Yes, that happens in our house all the time. Yeah. My kids beat me quite a few times in games. It doesn't matter where you're from. Some games you can overcome language barriers, or there's all kinds of things that you can overcome and come and sit and enjoy each other's company around a board game. And that's what I enjoy about it.
Katie was talking about finding the right game for the right person. And I think part of my philosophy with recommending games, reviewing games, is there are very few outright bad games. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that this game is a pile of garbage because
just because
it's not.
You don't like
right.
it. Right.
So it's more about describing the game well enough for people to be able to recognize whether they like those aspects of the game. You know, I like low confrontation, point salad, roll and write, tiling. I don't want to bid or auction or lie, but Will likes all of those
yeah.
things. And just because I don't like a game doesn't mean that it's a bad game or that people who like that game are stupid. So I think for most of us, we would approach games with that positive outlook of this game is for somebody. Yeah. And we do want to match the right people with the right games. We don't want to say, hey, this game is for everybody and everyone should go out and buy it. But it's also not something that you should throw in the garbage that no one should ever buy.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting how we all enjoy playing games together. All of us individually like very different games, but we still have a great time no matter what we're playing. And I think, yeah, that works well for us to be able to cover a variety of games because, yeah, if it's a game that's cooperative and has zombies and takes 4 hours, I'm probably not interested, but Ryan and Katie might be all over that.
We would be, yes.
Exactly.
One thing I appreciate having an art education background where I've spent a lot of time learning how to be constructive, to critique something. Blue may be my least favorite color, and it's Will's favorite.
It's the best color.
So just like a board game mechanic might be my least favorite, but it's somebody's favorite. So finding the right person for the right game, there's always something you can say positive about it, even if it's not your favorite. So
yeah, it is interesting. Critiquing is like a learned skill. Yeah, that's a good thought. Kevin, tell us the secrets you've been pondering over there. Why are you on?
I've been throwing in little peanut things here and there.
Absolutely. Tell us what is it about games?
Well, I was going to say when first starting out with Tantrum House, like you said, like everything's like a party and Christmas and all that, and all the games are great. Even if it's a zombie, I don't care. I'm going to play it because all these things. I would say over the years, I think my tastes have definitely been refined. Mm-hmm. So I've been like, I figure out what I like more. Like, I think I still enjoy many, many different types of games, and I'll play the backstabby bidding games or area control games, and I'll play the Euro games or I'll play those. But I will say, like, over the years, I'll be like, I enjoy those, but I like these games even better. And I think that's helped me refine over the years. So yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting how, because people are wired so differently, there needs to be a bunch of different types of games. And so figuring out, yeah, which one is right for you, which one are you going to enjoy, which one can you tolerate playing with someone else because you know they'll love it. Yeah. It's an interesting gathering of experience that you get over time.
One of the things about Tantrum House, and I think there's I shouldn't say a lot of misconceptions, but there are some misconceptions out there with Tantrum House. This is something that we're doing on the side, something we enjoy doing. It's a hobby. It's not something we're doing because we have to do it. It's not our full-time job. It's not like we're putting food on the table because of Tantrum House. And there's a lot of people. There are people out there that think that.
Yeah,
they think that true. Tantrum House is like how we get our bread and butter,
and we are not.
but we enjoy coming together and doing the gaming and things like that. I was going to say, what segue into that is, at the beginning it was like, yeah, we want to play all the games, and I feel like now, even because it's a hobby, I'm like, oh, I can be a little bit more selective in, oh, you know, Melissa and I are going to be picking games or choosing games from thousands of games that come out every year. And in the past, it was like, we'll just take any game that comes. And now it's like, oh, you know, let's be a little bit more refined in what we're picking and choosing. And, oh, you know, we like worker placement games, or we'll read the rules and we'll say, that sounds interesting to us. I'll spend more time on those types of games. And that really comes down to it for me, is the time. So when I begged Will to join Tantrum House back in 2015, you know, it was, I enjoy it, but now I think, oh, I love doing this, but there is the time factor on how much time do I have in a given day, week, month, am I going to do for Tantrum House
And that time is definitely compounded too, because as we've grown our channel, grown our audience, like more and more games are coming in. And so, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Trying to be selective on what are the ones that, you know, we really want to help see be successful. How can we help, you know, this company has done great stuff and we're excited about their work. How can we share that? This guy is a brand new guy on the scene, but man, he's got his stuff together and he mm-hmm. looks sharp and this is a great looking game. There's definitely more like pre-checking of games than there used to be. It was like, it comes in the mail, let's do it, it's going to be fun. And now it's like, you know, we only have so much time in a day to be able to dedicate to it.
Yeah, and some of us have grown our actual families during this time and have...
In the last 5 years, you've grown more people in your family?
Yeah.
Multiple people.
Yeah, we've got extra kids now, and we have even less time. A lot of times... I'm filming B-roll while Ryan is at work, and I've got two kids screaming in the background. If the B-roll had audio,
he left the audio on.
There would be some strange sounds. Some screaming, Mom, I need milk. Mom, I need milk. Okay. Mom, I'm lunch.
And you get there,
lunch.
And her cup's full. It is, you know, it's like little kids always have something to talk about.
Yep. So there'd be some really strange audio noises. I'm sure everybody's got something like that would happen your videos.
Going back to that time factor is, and a lot of people in the board game industry, or even people looking at people that are creating content, you have the people who are doing it because they love doing it, the passion. And I think we still have that passion, but there comes a point when I think even in Tantrum House, it's like, you know, we it has to be worth our while. So that's where the money comes in some cases. So how are we going to make it worth, you know, all the time that we're spending? And Will, you mentioned this earlier, the editing, the doing the video work, the B-roll that Katie is talking about, like, you know, our time is valuable. And I think we have to show that in some ways. So whether we're doing a playthrough, whether Melissa's doing a how to play, or even any kind of video content we're doing, you know, that does matter to us, that our time is valuable.
Right. And I think that topic has come up a little bit, especially as we're talking about our Kickstarter that's coming up. We do that Kickstarter because, you know, we first off, we want to have good equipment. We want to do good quality work. And then some of that is just like, as the hobby has grown and taken over my entire living room, which we're sitting in right now, I don't know if people know that too. Like, we don't rent studio space. We don't have like full out studios. We have my living room where we have a bunch of microphones hidden under the table and a couple of lights permanently mounted to my ceiling walls,
right,
so that I don't have to set them up and tear them down all the time. And then I do just live here sometimes during the week. So some of those things, like just making life, you know, more convenient. Like, it would be great to have a space to put all this stuff into so that I don't have to hide it, you know, when company comes over or whatever.
Or shipping promos.
Right. Yeah. There's, yeah, boxes and boxes hidden in my dining room corner.
They're not hidden. They're in plain sight.
we all step around them. Yes. Right.
I just loved it when we came over for Halloween. You created a Halloween decor out of the promo boxes by putting like white sheets over them.
It made it look like ghosts. Yeah,
yeah, it was kind of funny.
Boxes of ghosts in the corner. Yeah, so I agree. Like, we do enjoy it so much. I think there's a little bit of a difference between people who, like, we are passionate about playing games together. Like, it's just, it's fun.
It's the people that's at the table with us.
I think some people are out there like, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, but I don't think we ever had the intent of being, this is a popular word all the time, like influencers. That was never my goal, to like tell people, you have to go buy this game or go buy this game. It was more just like, I like this game. I also like making videos because that's one of the things I do in my day job. And let's put them together. Yeah. And there are a lot of people in the industry who I think do intend to like be out there starting conversations, you know, stirring up stuff, not in a bad way. There's probably bad people on it too, but I just mean like in general, some people want to really grow their audience and really push it and really do all these things. I don't really feel like that's something that we've ever, you know, like, we want as many people to watch our stuff as they want to, but we're not like, you know, we're not getting paid to do it for somebody. We don't want to necessarily be like the spokesperson for somebody. It's just, these are games that we generally and genuinely enjoy and wanted you guys to know about.
And going back to the money thing, it is kind of interesting because we are four couples plus interns. I would say for the most part, we don't even know what's paid and what's not paid in some cases, right? And I think that matters because I know sometimes we have to be careful and I'm like, oh, well, this is a sponsored thing.
Right. I shouldn't have said I enjoyed it that much.
Right. So, and I know we're really clear. We're trying to be more clear in our, what's sponsored and what's not sponsored in our promotion and in our videos. And we have the little paid tag and stuff like that. But I think even in what we're saying, I think it does matter.
Right. So. Yeah. Being transparent is important and being genuine is very important, and to the point where I actually prefer not to know.
I would say the majority of the time.
What are we doing tonight?
The reviews are always free. We have never been paid for a review. Boom. There's other content that it might be paid and it might not. And sometimes, unless I go in the records and emails and something that Kevin had with the publisher,
I would say the only people
I may
that,
not know either way.
Right. You could go research and find out. That's easy to find out. But I would say, like, actually, like, when you're actually playing the game and doing all the stuff before we actually do a video, I would say Ryan knows, and I know.
Good job, Ryan, being our
company. Because he's the one sending the invoice in most cases.
Does Ryan remember?
That's not the question. It's like, Ryan might not even remember. So, I mean, he probably does. He's got a good memory.
He does have a good memory.
He does.
Yeah.
And he's going to listen to this part.
And then
we
whoever
love you,
is putting them up on YouTube will go ahead and make sure all the boxes are checked for all of that. Yeah, yeah. But when I'm just playing the game, it comes to my house and
you're just,
I learn it and like, oh, I guess I could find out if this is paid for it. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could talk about bias for a couple of minutes because I do think I've seen that as a topic of conversation on Facebook and stuff recently. And I think there's a definite, I mean, I would admit that there's a definite bias that comes in when you receive that Christmas present on your doorstep. There's an excitement level there that is generated by the fact that you got this thing for free. And so I think that does obviously bias your opinion to the game. If I didn't get the game for free and I never saw the game because it didn't show up in my house, then obviously I'm not going to talk about it or be excited about it.
I would agree, but I would say over the years I would become less biased because of that.
Exactly, and that was going to be my point.
Well, because the box means work.
Right, the Christmas effect did wear off after year two.
It did. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, this is amazing. I'm just going to do a video because and then 3 years later it's like,
it's a little more about where are we going to fit it in the schedule?
Right.
Who's going to be able to do this by the time they need it done? Yeah.
Yeah, who's interested in it, who's willing to take the time to do it.
So I agree that bias has changed over the years for me, and it sounds like for everyone else here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then the question is, if you know you're getting paid for a game, do you say nicer things about it? Well, when the only games that we're really getting paid for are Kickstarter overviews, the preview videos. There's a couple other playthroughs and how to plays, but those are obvious, like, you know, a how to play video. You're not sharing your opinion anyway.
And playthroughs, you're seeing how we're playing it.
Right. The genuine experience of us playing it. And then you're just, the people who are sponsoring those are just, you know, it's an opportunity to get in front of our audience, I guess. The preview videos for Kickstarter, those are...
They've changed over the years.
Right, they have for sure. And we've tried to make those very much like a paid infomercial. This is what the game looks like. This is what the components are. And so we do try our best not to share opinions or even let our opinions of the game bias us in the way
Most
that we
present
the information.
Most of us do our best.
I get a little excited if a game is super good. But that's like the opposite. Like, I'm not saying it's good because because somebody paid me money to produce this. I'm saying it's good because, like, I can't control how much fun I had.
Yeah, and I would say our goal, and sometimes we do better at achieving this than other times, is for the overviews, previews to be what the game is, mm-hmm. and not whether we are endorsing. We're not really critiquing the game. And part of that is because we're dealing with prototypes. Sometimes the rules aren't even finished, or the components. So it's not even really fair to critique the prototypes.
Sometimes the rules change after we made the video.
Yeah, and usually things are updating in the campaign. They're unlocking new things. So we may have gotten kind of the base level, but then it expands. And sometimes that expansion is awesome. And sometimes it's like, wow, they didn't really play test this. And so we don't have that final product. All we can talk about is what was sent to us and give you an idea of what it is. There was something there. There is an actual game. But I don't think we ever really push people either. We're not like, this is the hottest thing ever. You have to go on Kickstarter and you have to get it. It's like,
hey. I mean, I probably said that once or twice.
Well, it's more of, hey, this is what it is. And if this sounds interesting to you, go check it out. Get more information. You make your decision.
Right. Yep. Yep. Well, we got really heavy, but I think we talked about some really good stuff tonight, too. I know that for me, the joy of Tantrum House, the reason that I'm in it, the reason that I keep coming back to it and I don't give up even when I'm like, even when it's midnight on Saturday and I'm like, oh, man, I thought I was going to get this video done today. really is because of the people. Like, it's all about people. It's about you guys. It's about...
Aw, that's so sweet.
It's about, you know, first off, not wanting to let anybody down is a little bit of that because we have worked so well as a team together that if there's any pressure on me to, like, get the video done, it's because, like, I want to make the team proud, which I think is pretty awesome. I hope it is. And then it's also because of you guys. Like, there's an incredible amount of joy and satisfaction that comes from hearing from our fans, whether we're at events or whether
you guys like
emails.
Us. So I was like,
it was us to start. Oh,
the pressure we put on Will.
You guys. Kevin's pressuring me all the time. I mean, just opportunities to, like, know that we have friends all over the place. There was nothing better than when Sarah and I went to Essen last year, whenever it was, and people came up to us and they knew us and they were excited to see us and it was a fun time to be able to hear their stories. There's kind of nothing better than being able to connect with friends over a piece of cardboard.
Are we going to end it? But before we do, we have to talk about Loki at the end.
Oh, we do. We absolutely. So let's hit that rollout music and then let's talk about Loki at the end. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you had a great time. Be your friends.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's Barry, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
I just want to give Ryan a hard time right off the bat because we're live and he has to listen and edit. I can't believe he waited. Katie was just saying that he waited to watch the last two episodes together. Who does that?
Yeah, we watched 5 and 6 back to back.
Okay, so we had a week in between to digest, watch all the Easter eggs, anticipate the finale. Tell us what it was like to just watch them just boom, boom, right in a row.
It was a lot to digest. And to be honest, I'm going to have a hard time distinguishing between the two while we're talking.
We're talking about the final two.
Well, yeah, the final two episodes, 5 and 6. The difference, just to remember, is they didn't get to see the castle. They saw the castle at the end of 5.
Okay. But they didn't quite get there.
They didn't get into the castle.
Okay, as I say, because we rolled right from one into the other.
Okay.
It was like a one long finale episode, I guess.
I guess that makes it more cinematic in the hour. It was probably longer than an hour, hour and a half. What are they, 45-minute episodes? Mm-hmm. So let's just start off right off the bat. Were you satisfied? Were you sad?
So we knew at the end of 4 that the pruning wasn't really killing people.
Right.
Which I told Melissa at the very beginning. I'm like,
very beginning?
I'm like, is pruning? I don't think pruning is killing them. And like everyone's like, oh yeah, pruning's, you're dead. I'm like, I don't know. And then in 4, we figured out, oh no, something happens.
Kevin, too smart.
No, it's not that. It's just like, it just made sense. And then in 5, that...
You learn about this whole crazy world that's at the end of time that's getting devoured by the great devourer.
I forget the name of the monster.
Chogdor. He's got a cool name.
Olynthia or something.
Aliath?
Yeah, something like that.
Something.
Aliath.
Thank you, sir. Aliath.
Wow.
Like Goliath, but without the G.
Sure.
And then did they throw a stone at his head? Was this like a biblical metaphor? I didn't just realize this.
No, they had to.
They were like Adam and Eve at the beginning of creation.
No, they had
enchanted the.
Oh, enchanted it with a rock.
Did you even watch this one?
Enchanted it with a rock.
I know what you watched.
What were you watching?
I was reading my Bible, just so you guys know.
Gator Loki.
Gator Loki was crazy.
Loki. Gator Loki is by far my favorite Loki now. I so need a t-shirt with Gator Loki on it.
I read a fan theory about Gator Loki.
Tell us.
Oh, let's hear it.
Okay. I don't believe it is true.
But it'd be amazing.
So first of all, before I even talk about it, I want a spinoff series of just classic Loki and Gator Loki.
Whole
6 episodes. Ooh. It'd be great.
That's a lot.
You could throw the young kid Loki in there too. Anyway, their theory was that Gator Loki had classic Loki as a whatever it's called, where he
variant.
No.
Mentor.
He's
the only one that understood Gator Loki.
Loki projects himself in like multiple times because Gator Loki couldn't communicate. If you think about it, classic Loki was the only one that could speak his language. Mm-hmm. So classic was really just a projection of Gator Loki that he made of himself because then he could talk to other people. Yeah.
That was like hilarious. That
so
that would
be
crazy.
At the end, a projection of a projection?
Yes. So I don't know. The theory fell apart halfway through. But I was
fun.
Like, oh, that's an interesting thought.
That's great. I like that fan theory a lot.
I do too.
So Mobius makes it back.
Right.
Shows up, confronts Chief Lady.
I don't know what her name is.
I'm terrible at names. And then she's going to prune him again. That was rough. Was that the plan, right? He was like threatening to prune her. He walks in with a stick.
She didn't prune him.
She did.
She threatened
there was
to.
Like,
yeah. She was ready to do it.
You think?
Yeah.
So
I don't know where her deal is.
Where does she go?
Where did she go? Yeah, that's a great question.
Did she leave?
That was a definite cliffhanger moment.
Yeah, well, that's definitely going to be in the second season.
Wait. There's a second season?
Yes.
Guaranteed.
Disney you didn't Plus. See
I saw.
That?
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Come
on. So I knew going into it because I had watched a couple of other like sneak peeky things or whatever that Kang was going to be the main dude at the end.
Oh, okay.
Which he never actually called himself Kang. But
he remains.
Right.
So
which
I
is also
honestly
the Conqueror.
Episode 5 was good. I thought episode 6 was too slow.
Too slow. They tried to tell too much story.
It was a little did, but I was okay with it.
You're okay. I felt like they could have shortened it like in half and it had been still like I would have gotten everything.
Like maybe it was too drawn out.
Too drawn out.
I agree. It felt like they didn't have quite enough stuff. And yeah, and just had
and
to draw
like,
it out.
Oh, are we going to another season? Oh, I guess we need to draw this episode out.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like. I was like, what's happening? It's like, what are they going to do? Oh, they're gonna kill him. Oh.
Kill him, not kill him. Kill him, not kill him.
Right. Try to kill him. Listen to him a little bit. Yeah, try to kill him again.
It was kind of interesting.
Try to kill each other.
And now I don't know what happens.
Right. The ending. That was weird. I don't know what was up with that.
I know everything's gonna
happen till this right now.
Yeah, it's like he had it all figured out up until that point.
Which and makes he was no sense.
But it was no. I agree. It doesn't make any sense. But I did enjoy the the dynamic there where he was kind of this all-knowing. He knew everything that was going to happen. And then his giddiness at like, oh, and now I don't know. And he was so excited in that he had finally gotten to a point in time where he didn't know what was going to happen anymore.
I feel like, unfortunately, that's just going to be a plot hole that's just left hanging. Like, they're just going to
move on.
Yeah.
But he went back at the end of 6 to this other timeline.
Right, which is a great cliffhanger, but I think they're still just going to give up. Like, oh, Kang just didn't know for some reason.
I don't know. I heard somebody explain it to that timeline was almost like a loop. So here he knew everything.
At the end of time sort of thing?
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And he was positioned at a place where changed it. And
they
showed the
timeline as a circle around his little castle area. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then it started diverging when they made a choice.
So are we talking about like predictions for season 2?
Sure. Well, let's talk for one second because I did love the ending. I thought it was great. Loki shows up. He heads back to that little teeny tiny library balcony.
He goes to Mobius. He goes, hey.
Yeah. And he's like, who are you? Yeah. I was like, oh, you got me. I didn't see it coming. Like, I did not see that coming.
Ryan was so mad. Ryan was very angry
because
he's like, he built up these friends and now they're completely gone. Ryan felt like it was... He cares about all these people, and then suddenly all the people that he cared about is ripped away again. So he sort of felt like it was going to be a reset of the Loki character.
Oh, I would hate that part. I didn't get that far in my... Because I was impressed by Loki's development. Like, at the end, he finally is willing to trust her.
He does care about stuff.
Right, he does actually
there's no way to
love someone,
ever
even though it's himself.
Find
is it really?
Sylvie
we don't really know.
Again. Like, there's no way he'll ever be able to find her. Like, there's
I think
no.
He can.
I mean, he might find her, but there's no, like, there's so many divergent timelines. So she could be on any of these time trees.
Right.
And she could be in any of those, anywhere along those time trees.
Yeah. So I assume that is the quest if we're making predictions.
There we go.
I assume the quest for the second season is he's got to refind. He's probably going to find Mobius first, would be my thought.
I think so.
The real Mobius? Or is he just going to try to befriend one?
He's going
to
go find
I hope he finds the real one. I do. That's a great theory that if he's just like put off by, I tried to make these friends and I didn't and I reset, that would be terrible. I hope it doesn't happen.
I do too. I hope
he goes on a quest, finds Mobius, and then they work for a couple episodes until they find her.
He finds his glorious purpose.
Right. There we go.
What about the Infinity Stones? Is he going to find some just for fun?
I mean, he had a whole handful of them.
Did he really? I missed
this. Yeah. They were in the drawer. Why not grab some?
Did he grab some?
Probably.
Okay.
I think he probably already has one of each, and they just hadn't shown it because, let's face it, that's who Loki is.
I think it'd be hilarious.
He's probably already got some.
He's probably got multiple of each. He's probably got some that we don't even...
Just in case.
Yeah.
I keep seeing all these Facebook clickbait things. I haven't actually clicked on any of them where they're like, Kang is going to make Thanos look like a... weenie, you know, or whatever. And then the next one, Galactus is going to make Thanos look like the weakest villain ever. So they're obviously building up to these bigger,
the multiverse. I'm assuming Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch is all involved in all this, right? Yes. So what is up with that? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Well, there's only one Scarlet Witch.
I understand that.
So even with the multiverse, there's only one of her.
Okay.
Oh, really? How do we know that?
Because she's a Nexus character.
Oh, that is
only,
right. Yeah.
Why wasn't she
one
pruned?
Of her, what?
Why wasn't she pruned?
There's only one
whatever.
Of her. They can't prune because there's no variants of Scarlet Witch.
Sounds like a great theory. I don't know where this is coming from.
But the multiverse
the comic books
isn't coming out.
Okay.
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse isn't coming out until like next year sometime.
Right. There's like two or three other videos before that one. Yeah. It'll be interesting for sure.
Let's rate real quick.
Our favorite Marvel TV series.
WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, and now we have the last one with Loki.
Are we throwing in old ones like Daredevil?
No.
Oh, no.
Just the newest three.
Just the ones.
Daredevil was very good.
So, Ryan watched those. He liked those all.
I really enjoyed Daredevil.
What would you do, Katie?
I would say WandaVision first.
Okay.
Just because it was so much like, what is even happening here? And there was a lot of nostalgia thrown in.
Right.
And then, although I will say I didn't enjoy the WandaVision ending nearly as much as some of the other ones.
they knew it was going to be a one shot. I'm pretty sure they knew this was going to be one season and only one season.
Yeah. So anyway, WandaVision is first for me, and then the Loki one, and then Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I agree. Those are in my three order as well.
That's also my order.
So, but you have Agatha too in WandaVision.
Yeah.
And she might come back.
I know. I have been surprised that we haven't seen a little more crossover, because nobody ever references what happened with Wanda, even though everything else is supposedly happening later.
They might not
later.
Have been able to. I don't know.
And I guess kind of Falcon and Winter Soldier would have been the only one that could do that.
Even in the movies, it's always like there's the Spider-Man movie and there's like one reference to like, oh yeah, Iron Man's busy, you know, whatever. Like, none of it really makes sense. All the superheroes should be hanging out all the time. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I heard a lot of people that were upset that Iron Man wasn't in the Black Widow movie. So...
I haven't seen Black Widow yet.
I haven't seen it yet. No spoilers.
Well, let's talk about that.
I haven't seen it yet. Well, like, there's the entire Iron Man 2, she's in Iron Man 2.
Right,
but
right.
None of those scenes show up.
I gotcha.
I thought this was a prequel, but I don't know where it slots into her timeline.
Oh, yeah, I don't know either.
If she was working with the Avengers.
Well, we're not talking about that because we don't get spoiled.
If we were talking about it, it slots in before Endgame, after Civil War.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Oh, there's also before that. Like,
sure.
When she's a kid.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's full backstory, but the current timeline in the movie is before Endgame.
Will and Sarah, you didn't talk about your order.
Go ahead.
I enjoyed the first five episodes of WandaVision, especially the first couple where you just had no idea what
that
was
left
going
you hanging in on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I can't give Loki a fair judgment because I ended up watching these episodes and I was extremely tired.
Will has talked about this.
Very late at night. Like, I'm getting up at like 6 a.m. and we're starting it at 1 a.m.
I heard you slept through Black Widow and you had to watch it again.
We haven't even watched
Black Widow. Oh, you haven't watched it again?
No. I know like a third of what happened.
Oh, poor Sarah.
And I even fell asleep of the last episode of Loki and I haven't gone back and watched that yet. What? Okay. Will didn't even know that. It was like talking in the middle and I was like, I don't know how much I missed, but I'm just going to keep going.
That was the part Kevin and I were talking about was a little drawn out.
And I was really trying hard to stay awake, but it was just Will picked a really bad time to watch it.
Okay. Right. Will, so WandaVision, Loki, and then
there are some episodes of Falcon and Winter Soldier that I really liked. Specific episodes I'd move up. Overall, I understand they probably re-edited and retold some story of Falcon and Winter Soldier from what they originally had.
Because of quarantine and stuff. Yeah.
So I think I probably would have put that above Loki, only because I knew what Loki's story ended. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't going to be more character. I mean, it was all backstory. Mm-hmm. Like, same as for Black Widow. That movie I'm not as invested in because
you know
it's all
ending.
Backstory. Yep. I know the ending of that story. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I felt going into Loki. This is all backstory, although now it's multiverse.
Mm-hmm. I love the cinematography of Loki.
Agreed.
Yes. Like, I love the
somebody
aesthetics.
Somebody had a theory that, like, all of them, each episode was colorized similar to the six Infinity Stones.
Oh, I have to look back on that one.
Me too. I don't know.
Okay,
don't
so I'll be different. I'll say that even though I thought WandaVision was a lot of fun to watch, I didn't really feel like it fit as well in the Marvel universe because of the, you know, time changey stuff and stuff, which was neat and interesting. And I was like intrigued by it. But I think as far as like progressing the Marvel line, it didn't really do as much. Like it was kind of just a pull out of nowhere thing. Maybe stuff will come up with Agatha or something in the future.
It tied some worlds together, but didn't progress. Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel like Loki has done just some incredible, crazy things that are going to change. Like that's the pivot point.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Doctor Strange will be more of a pivot point or whatever, but the multiverse introduction and the fact that I would like bought into the way they did it, without feeling like this is fake or this isn't real. Like I super enjoy time travel movies, but more often than not, there's so many plot holes and like issues with them that it's like hard to really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the way they did this and explained things and like they sucked me into the believability of it in this universe. So I was excited. I have like more anticipation for what's coming as a result of that. When WandaVision ended, I was like, oh, that was a weird ending and a fun show. I really enjoyed that. This one, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to be back at the theater. Bring me the big blockbuster movies. So I would probably rank it number one, and then WandaVision number two, and then Winter Soldier three.
I think one thing I liked about WandaVision is because it was based off of TV, they felt like TV episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did a good job of making the Loki and the Falcon Winter Soldier feel like the episodes individually weren't formatted well for
an episodic sort
for
of thing.
Being episodic.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I disagree. I think Winter Soldier was slow and it felt like a TV show. Like this was a filler episode and this was a whatever. I didn't feel like that with Loki other than maybe like 3 minutes on the final episode where I was like, they're kind
of 20 minutes of the final episode.
It was only 3 minutes for me. I liked the other 18 of those
part
boring minutes.
Asleep, yeah.
I felt like it paced well. And I liked that there was a cliffhanger each episode. Like, what are they showing us right now?
Loki was definitely paced better and better formatted for TV than the Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I agree. Like, you kind of expect certain things to happen in a TV episode, and some of those, like, were just kind of thrown out the window.
It was
like this was
Falcon
a movie we chopped up.
Yes, that's exactly what it felt like. Here's a movie we wanted to make, but now we got to format it for episodes. All right, let's just chop it here. We'll just cut it right here, and then we'll cut it right here. That's kind of what it felt like.
Yep. So it'll be interesting to see what season two brings. We didn't do too many predictions, but hopefully Kang gets super powerful and crazy, and Loki finds Mobius, and they all live happily ever after. And I think there's, three or four movies coming out this year, plus a bunch of series announced. Did you guys see the What If promo thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Crazy.
That
crazy
does
stuff.
Look, that looks fun. I don't know. Like, it's going to have the same issue where it doesn't, further the plot at all. But I'm very curious anyway.
It's going to be fun. Can't wait.